right, welcome to this week's episode of Double Line Minutes. I'm Jeff Mayberry here with Mark Kimbrough.
Hey.
Mark, it's June 7th. We're a little bit after 10 a.m. Pacific. Thank you for all the people who are listening to us live and not watching the meme lord do his thing there. With that, it is a few hours before the market closes. So we're going to give you a kind of a live look at what's happened in the market so far this week. Obviously, things can change here before the end of the week. But looking at it, it looks like a pretty good week there for the S&P, up about 1.7% on the week. Looks like the big winner is tech, up almost 3%. The big loser is energy down. Oh, no. I was going to say energy is down 3%. That's the big loser. But nope, utilities is down 3.5%. So they're the big loser. Still looks like utes are up 12% on a year-to-date basis. Comm services is the best performer year-to-date, up, call it 17 and change there. So kind of a mixed bag there for the S&P overall, but tech, comm services, consumer discretionary, kind of those big weights in the index, positive returns lead to a positive return for the index. You can kind of see that with the growth up almost 3% on the week, value actually down 60 basis points, and then just given the breadth, looking at S&P equal weight actually down 60 basis points on the week also. So I'd say that the big mega cap names continue to perform well. And interestingly, one of the biggest just past $3 trillion in market cap is going for a stock split, I think on Monday. And there was some interesting research out there saying that that average return for companies that announce a stock split are about 25% in the 1 year after the split versus like a 12% gain for the S&P 500. And so people were saying, more companies should split stocks, but you have to kind of think of the inherent bias in the types of companies that are doing stock splits. Those are actually the ones, that are roaring, that are going up in price so much that they need to do the stock split. If you if your price is falling so much, you do a reverse stock split where your price goes up to keep it, above the sort of, the listing standards. So it's kind of interesting, and I would take that research with a large grain of salt there. We kind of shift our mood over to the bond market. It felt like it's interesting, the big move today, and Mark, you'll get into kind of the econ side of things on what happened on the macro front. But given the big move today, it kind of felt like I would have assumed that rates were going to be up on the week, but looking like 10-year down 8 bips, the 2-year is, we'll call it flat. Down a basis point or so, the long bond down 11. But really, we're ending the week at 4.42 on the 10-year, and probably won't move too much there on the bond market here for the next 3 hours or so. But right now, we're at 4.42 on the 10-year. We're at 4.87 on the 2-year. So everything's below 5% again, or continues to be below 5%. But a pretty decent week there for the bond market. That turns into the Bloomberg Ag, up about 50 basis points on the week. The winner there is mortgages up 0.75 points. Looks like governments and investment grade corporates hovering around just slightly below that half a percent. The non-index sector is actually doing worse. I guess that makes sense given that we have a little bit of that rate rally today. High yield up 40 bips, bank loans up 0.33 points, and EM, we'll call it just slightly positive on the week. So overall, a pretty good week for the bond market. Still looking at the ag down just over 1% on the year. Need some little bit of time to recover there from the bond market side. So if we turn to two positives, and then as usual, we do get a negative there on the commodity side. Very, very rare for us, or very rare for the all markets to be positive all in 1 week. So commodities down 1%. Looks like actually energy, surprisingly to me at least, up 2% on the week. That's the only winning sector. Industrial metals, the big loser, down almost 5%. It's like it's led by WTI came in at 75.5, so down about 1.5%. Copper down 2.5%, and it looks like Kimbrough, your favorite asset class, or your favorite asset, gold, down 0.75 points there. It's like at 2306 is what I see on the market today.
It's a bad day for gold today.
Yes, it's with that rate move down, I'm looking at gold down $66 today. So you're right, that is a bad move. With that, it is a busy macro week, or was a busy macro week. So, Mark, why don't we kick off to you in terms of what's going on in macro land?
All right. We know it's Jobs Friday, Pizza Friday, so labor will be the focus of the week, but we'll start where we were on Monday. On Monday, we had the ISM manufacturing report for May get released. This came in at 50 again. It printed at 48.7 versus estimates of 49.5. In general, 18 of the last 19 prints have been below 50. The one exception was in March this year, but the recovery with the manufacturing continues to be elusive, at least according to Axsen. On Tuesday, we got the JOLTS job openings for April getting released. These came in below estimates. They printed 8.059 million versus a prior 8.355 million. Call it a loss of about 300,000 job openings. This brings the ratio of job openings to unemployed down to 1.24. That's the lowest since June 2021 at 1.08. This rate continues to fall. This is supposed to end up relieving pressure on the wage side of inflation. We'll see how it continues to develop. But right now, we're about where we were. Actually, the highest point back in 2019 was 1.24. So we're kind of sitting right where we were before the whole COVID event took off. Going forward to Wednesday, we have the ADP employment report getting released for May. This came in at 152,000 versus estimates of 175,000. That's Steel Mayberry's phrase here, and take this with a grain of salt. We prefer the establishment household data to be released today on Friday. So we'll talk about that more in the ADP line. Also on Wednesday, we have ISM services for May. These rebounded strongly and beat estimates. Printed 53.8 versus a prior of 49.4. Looking under the hood in this report, within the details, we had all of the demand-related metrics in expansion territory. That's new orders, new export orders, inventories, and the backlog of orders. Very demand positive there. On the business activity front, this is the actual production that's happening in the service economy. That printed a 61.2. That's up 10.3 points month over month. Just a reminder, it's confusing to see. 61.2 is relative to 50. That's 11.2 points over that even level, which means that 11.2% on a net basis sit there to be increased in a month. But this is the highest level at 61.2 we've seen since November 2022. The employment metric within this report contracted for the fourth consecutive month. Say it's labor week, so I'm going to mention it. The report does, though, mention that companies, they may have decreasing payrolls, but they're trying, or on a diffusion basis, they have decreasing payrolls. But they're mentioning that they're still trying to hire, they're just not being as successful as they're hoping to be. And lastly, in this report, we have prices still remaining elevated territory. It's at 58.1. All in all, services, they continue to march on.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting, Mark, that the prices, while still elevated, did decrease. And I think that the market kind of took that as the as a reason, or the bond market took that as a reason to rally. Kind of we put in a good 5 basis point rally or so on the 10-year on Wednesday, on the back of pretty good rallies from earlier in the week on the other data too. So
Yeah, progress and disinflation.
it felt like on Wednesday it felt like things were looking good across for the economy, and things were kind of slowing down.
It really did. I mean, the move we had, to say that we're still up all the week after the move we've had today in rates is impressive. It shows how strong the week it really was.
Yep.
Going forward to Thursday, we had initial and continuing claims for the weeks ending June 1st and May 25th, respectively. Nothing to see here. We're going to call it steady issue drifts. I'll give you the 4-week moving averages. 4-week moving average initial claims. It came in at 222,000. That's down 1,000 from last week. And the 4-week moving average continuing claims came in at 1.789 million. That's 3,000 higher than last week. So again, steady issue drifts here.
I thought it was funny that people were trying to make a big deal about like a what was it like a 2,000 increase in continuing claims and a 9,000 increase in initial claims, trying to make a big deal about that, and everyone or people were starting to just be like, it's a holiday week, so a lot of times you do get those kind of increases in over like a Memorial Day weekend. So the
That's sort
people
of
that the
all.
bearish people were trying to make some big deal about it, but got
The
pushed
bearish
back.
people can cling to one data point and extrapolate it as far as they want. But that's why we talk about the 4-week moving average to try and smooth out a little of
Yep.
that fun. Finally, we get to Friday today, Jobs Friday and Pizza Friday, as we like to say. We'll start with the establishment data set. That's the non-farm payrolls report. That came in at a strong 272,000. That's the third highest print we've seen in the last 12 months. And it was ahead of estimates. We do have a two-month net revision. It was down 15K. That's kind of been a trend. You know, we have some decent reports and shed those jobs as we go forward. But still, 272, it's a good number. Looking under the hood for the details here, you have 25K growth in goods producing jobs. We have 204K growth in service and 43K growth in government. Just looking at this report overall for just those numbers, it's not a lot to say. It was just a strong report. It was, you know, the gains were broad. You know, within the establishment data set, we did also have average hourly earnings coming in at 0.4% month over month, which brought the year over year number up to 4.1 versus estimates of 3.9%. So, I mean, all in all, just when you're looking at the establishment data set, pretty strong data set, which brings us to the household data set. Very different story. The U3 unemployment rate came in higher than estimated, came in at 4.0% versus the prior 3.9%. This happens on the back of labor participation rate falling. It actually fell to a one-year low of 62.5%. I don't want to make that sound like that's worse than it is. From December last year to February this year, we were at 62.5%. So we just are giving up some of those hard fight gains for the labor market to improve self-participation. Again, looking at details here, I'm going to list off a couple numbers or a few numbers here. We have the population listed to have increased by 182,000. You've got the labor force increasing by 250,000. There's a participation rate increase. You have a decrease in the employed of 408,000. And an increase in the unemployed of 157,000. All those numbers, none of those sound like the context of the establishment data. Those all sound bad. So what are you supposed to do with those two different sets of data? Well, you know what? Let's look to the bloodless verdict of the markets. I mean, I'd say that the market today so far looks to weigh these two data sets. And I'd say they'd say the establishment data carries a little more weight. And from the 2 year to the 30 year, right now we're up, 10 bips or more, as high as 15 bips on the called the 3 year. So that's not indicating any sort of we're cutting anytime soon. We're, you know, rates need to be falling. This was exact or opposite direction. It just gave up some of the gains we got this week. So that kind of recaps where we were this week.
Yeah, it's interesting, Mark. You have on here that I was looking at the Fed funds futures. It didn't really change a week over week. Right. So like really nothing's happening. We'll front run ourselves here at Fed meeting on Wednesday. There's like a 0% chance of anything happening on Wednesday in terms of the Fed funds rate. But I was looking, it's like an 89% chance of a cut in November, and we have 1.5 cuts priced in for the rest of the year, which is pretty on par with where we were last week. But if you think about where we were on like yesterday or Wednesday, things had moved to where there's a little bit more or a higher probability of a cut. I think you had here an 83% chance of a cut in September. It's now down to 63. So a pretty big move, push back that first rate cut from market pricing and the probability of first rate cut from September to now November. It does seem that that first rate cut just keeps getting pushed out and pushed out and pushed out as the economy continues to be strong and no real problems. I guess one of the kind of caveats is as we stay higher for longer, that the longer we stay at this kind of higher level, the increased probability of the Fed having to do some emergency rate cut increases. It's hard to kind of gauge in the, Fed funds futures markets, whether that probability, how that probability is shaking out. But right now it does seem that it's not really a case of the Fed, really being in rate cut mode, as you said, kind of for the rest of the year. So it'll be interesting to see how that shakes out. I did see that a lot of the drop in the labor force participation was in the over 55 crowd. So then Ryan Kimmel, who does that report for us, puts it together. I was looking at that chart and the over 55 number is pretty volatile. It's not like the constant overall labor force participation, which kind of moves up and down, 20 basis points or 0.2% moves is a big move. Than what we normally see, but the over 55 number is the kind of standard deviation of that is relatively high. It's easy to go from 65 to 60, so a 5% move there in 5 months is not out of the question.
Yeah, definitely see the volatility that's That's very, yeah. So kind of pretty entire thing is so here. It's pretty involved thing, so.
Yeah, so I guess, as we are data dependent and the market's reacting to this, at least we have one more high vol day out of the way. With that, Mark, you want to talk about what's going on next week? Because we have, we have one high vol day, but there's kind of two things going on Wednesday that are going to be important for markets.
Yeah, that's the big day. So yeah, next week is called Fed Week and Inflation Week. If I'm going to try and count this in the following weeks. No pizza Friday, unfortunately, next week. But we start off Tuesday. We get the NFIB Small Business Optimism for May. You know what? Small business owners, they've been pessimistic. We've been below the full series average since January 2022. The expectations for more of the same. It's just inflation and wage pressures are causing struggles with the small business community. More importantly, though, let's get to Wednesday, the main event. First off, we have CPI releases in that morning for May. Estimates are for the headline month-over-month number to come in at 0.1%. It's actually the local low that we've seen in the last 12 months. We've actually seen it happen twice, actually, in the last 12 months. The roll-off we're going to have for this year-over-year calculation is 0.1%, so there's no movement estimated for the year-over-year number. So that's supposed to stay at 3.4. The only meaningful roll-offs, the constant base effects that we talked about a lot over the last few years. So we always want to think of what's rolling off the calculation and what's going to kind of hit along the face these headline numbers. The only meaningful roll-offs that we have this rest of the year are in August, September at 0.5 and 0.4% respectively. The rest are all small fries. There's not much help we're going to get on the disinflationary path to the year-to-year number, aside from those 2 months.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to get the inflation to come down when you're having 0.1 rolling off.
Yeah, you need true deflation, which I don't think, we're not rooting for true deflation. We're looking for low inflation. So core month over month, that's estimated to come in at 0.3%, same as last month. That brings the estimate for the year-over-year core number to 3.5 versus the prior 3.6. After we get that early morning data point out of the way, we're going to get the FOMC rate decision. They estimated to remain at 5.5, as we said, basically 0%, materially 0% chance of a cut tomorrow. But we'll see what Kyle has to say in the press conference. It's always very, very fun day.
And I guess it is a June, so that we should get dots. So it'll be interesting to see what the dots say, because that should be big shifts from what happened in March. And I'm sure everyone will read way too much into the dots.
It's reading way too much. And you know what? In the end, the Fed just kind of keeps kicking the can. Just waiting a little longer, waiting a little longer, ask for patience.
Yep.
Thursday, we check back in on initial continuing claims. Again, steady she drifts. We have no estimates yet, but we'll see what we get. Also, we get PPI releasing for May and inflation week. Keep the focus here on core, the ex-food and energy measure. Month over month, it's estimated to rise 0.3% versus the prior 0.5%. Year over year, estimated to rise to 2.5 versus the prior 2.4%. You know what? There's not the same story with CPI here. We have 1 month of decent roll off in July of 0.6, and then the rest of the year it's small numbers, so not much expectation here of any major improvements in this PPI number. Moving forward to Friday, we have import price data coming out for May, another inflation metric. Last month it surged up to 0.9% on a month over month basis. This month expected to settle back down. I think I had 0.1%. Check that. Yeah. let's see. Deflationary base effects are set to roll off over the next 2 months, though. There's a lot of negative prints that are mixed into the import price index. Just at the end of last year, the year-over-year number was a negative 2.4%. We're now at 1.6% estimated for May. Lastly, we have Friday, the University of Michigan sentiment data and inflation expectations. Don't give much look to the actual sentiment data. Care about the inflation expectations, specifically the 5 to 10 year number, which Powell's mentioned. No estimate I've seen yet, but it's last month we had it at 3.0%. And hopefully it stays around the same level or declines. But that's all we've got for next week.
Well, should be, I guess given the moves in oil, and I've seen gas prices come down a little bit, maybe that. The extrapolation that people like to do will bring that longer term inflation down a little bit. Yeah. On a double line front, we do have Jeffrey Gundlach has his total return webcast on Tuesday at 1:15. Pacific time. So make sure to tune into that. And that's always interesting and useful. And I'm sure he has a lot of good charts there. Also, he'll be doing double duty with the Fed on Wednesday. He'll be on CNBC on Wednesday. And all, oh, that's live in the office on Wednesday. So maybe Mark, you and I walk in the background or something and wave to people. And also, we're releasing the most recent episode of Channel 11 here very shortly. Stay tuned to our YouTube channel there at youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital for updates there. With that, busy week, but I did say that we did get a topic of the week, or we did get an email for potential topic of the week from our old friend Sailor Mermaid. So we'll get to that in the next couple of weeks. But with that, like everyone, I'd like to thank everyone for listening.
Yes, thank you to all listeners out there today on DL Minutes. Hit us up on X at DL Minutes or send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com with any questions, comments, or suggestions.
And as I mentioned, our YouTube channel is youtube.com/DoubleLineCapital. We do have a video up of a very good conversation with Jeff Sherman and Rick Caruso. So I thought that was we saw that live, or I saw that live. So I thought that was interesting live. So I'm sure the replay is definitely worth people tuning in there.
Super interesting conversation.
Yeah, it covered a wide gamut of things. So it was obviously a lot of commercial real estate there. So that was something that was very useful for people interested in commercial real estate, which probably is most people these days, given that's the that's kind of the bugaboo out there. With that, hope everyone has a great weekend.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of DoubleLine Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents DoubleLine's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of DoubleLine. DoubleLine has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from DoubleLine, please contact media@doubleline.com. Neither DoubleLine nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. DoubleLine is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any DoubleLine entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any DoubleLine entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low risk. Copyright 2024, DoubleLine Capital.